Well, hold on, technical difficulties.
Okay. He's grinding to a halt.
Just to let everyone know, we'll be giving each speaker about 15 minutes, and then we'll be turning it over for the second half of the time to an open discussion, and I'll take a speaker's list for comments and questions.
All right. I'm going to give mainly an overview of what's happening, but with a specific focus on post-secondary education. I'm going to kind of frame the overall discussion. So this talk is about the trajectory of public policy related to post-secondary education and labor markets in Ontario. I'm going to interrogate and problemize how we as a society treat youth as they progress through school and transition into the labor market. I'm going to argue that post-secondary institutions contribute to the growing precarity, alienation, and insecurity that youth face in society. We're going to run through three main areas. First, I'm going to lay out some of the broad issues driving intern culture and the impacts arising from it. Second, I'm going to discuss the policy and statutory infrastructure underpinning intern culture and sketch out the relationships between government, corporations, and post-secondary institutions. And third, I'm going to end on a discussion about how we need to reconceptualize our labor market policy and point out some possible solutions. So, to start, I'm just going to frame some broad trends that are occurring within Ontario's youth labor market and explain the impacts arising from unpaid internships, and then outline some equality considerations related to this issue. So the nascent economic recovery, youth have been largely left behind in it. The real youth unemployment rate sits at 23.4%, and underemployment has become a defining feature of the youth labor market, as there is an oversupply of graduates and a jobs crisis with very little evidence of a skills mismatch. The problems within Ontario's youth labor market are structural and chronic, and not a result of the global financial crisis. There's over 450,000 students currently on Ontario's post-secondary education system. This is an all-time high and a result of McGuinty's ill-conceived strategy of pushing youth into advanced education absent any semblance of a labor market or industrial strategy. Youth with university degrees have a higher rate of unemployment than high school or college grads, and simply put, it appears that Ontario's universities are producing too many graduates with useless credentials. We're seeing the emergence of a two-tiered labor market with a hollowing out of mid-level positions. There's a rapid and growing divide between high-end, high-skilled positions and jobs versus low-end, low-skilled jobs. The entry-level positions of yesteryear have gotten contracted out and have become dead ends with no real possibility for career advancement. Employers have little incentive to invest in training for young workers, and we're seeing the rise of the just-in-time model in a lot of industries, and this warrants an on-demand worker. Perhaps the most compelling narrative within the youth labor market right now is the deep impact of precarious employment on workers under 35. These workers face a cycle of temp, contract, and project-based and contingent employment devoid of benefits, security, or permanence. So what's the impact from unpaid internships? Youth exist in a far worse world than Douglas Copeland's low pay, low prestige, low dignity, low benefit McJobs, which were defined in Generation X. It's defining work. For today's youth, there is a no pay, no prestige, no dignity, no benefit internship, where you have the right to work, but no right to pay. It's a pre-job, a form of vetting, where the employment relationship is often unclear and where youth are expected to provide unpaid labor in hopes of eventually landing a paid position. Unpaid internships are a form of wage theft, employee misclassification, and a distilled pure form of at-will employment. Many unpaid internships are legally denied wages, forego Canada pension plan and employment insurance contributions, and they don't pay income tax. Unpaid internships have a deep effect on the economy as paid employees get replaced with unpaid interns, youth delay major life events, and wages are driven down. Also, interns are forced to rely on familiar support or go into debt, often private debt. So now I'm just going to run through briefly some equality considerations. Unpaid internships at the core are a form of age discrimination, which unfairly target young workers. And unpaid internships also are probably one of the most poignant examples in modern-day society of the abject lack of intergenerational equity within our policy. Embedded within our current cultural practices is an expectation that youth will work for free without nary a thought of the deep impact from not having a paycheck. Internships also have a deep impact on the social cohesion, fueling income inequality, creating a city divided along race and class lines. What we're seeing is internships reward students on the basis of birth status, socioeconomic class, the wealth of their parents. And this impacts social mobility and decimates any notion of the meritocracy, where the most capable and talented students succeed. There's a creeping cultural apartheid in all of this, and what's occurring is youth from historically marginalized communities who typically have less ability to engage in unpaid labor are shut out from critical professions, which control the social, economic, and political levers of society. The very social fabric is being changed as students from historically marginalized communities are shut out. Another trend that I'm seeing is that international students are being forced into taking unpaid internships, and they face a heightened risk for exploitation from employers. Finally, on the issue of equality, there's a deep gendered dynamic engaged with unpaid internships. There's a close linkage between the rising labor market participation in women and the emergence of unpaid internships. American researchers estimate that 77% of unpaid interns are female, and most industries most heavily relied on unpaid labor are typically dominated by females. The rise of unpaid internships reinforces the historical undervaluing of female labor. Unpaid internships repeats the trend that we've seen previously with household work, the women's double day, and the gendered wage gap. So the next part that we're going to go through is the policy and statutory infrastructure. So I'm going to highlight some points on the policy infrastructure, and I'm going to focus on indoctrination, the statutory architecture, the impact of human capital theory, and work-integrated learning, and highlight the cozy relationship between universities, employers, and post-secondary institutions. So on indoctrination, this is very much a story about how youths are primed into accepting unpaid labor. Youths are indoctrinated from a young age into willingly provide unpaid labor without kicking up a fuss. In Ontario, high school students are pressured under the threat of being denied an Ontario secondary school diploma into forced labor, being a requirement that they volunteer for 40 hours over the course of high school. Many for-profit employers obtain thousands of hours each year of free labor from students in this manner. Another troubling development is that there has been a rapid growth in co-op education in Ontario's high school curriculum. Unpaid labor is pushed on youth, employers receive paid labor, and the paid jobs that high school students would normally do are replaced with unpaid student labor. So youth are subjected to messaging from the media and popular entertainment that signals that providing unpaid labor to employers is necessary. Agata Zieba has advanced the idea that media content is an important site of the construction of a glamorous view of internships. She goes on to reference media properties like The Hills, Miss 17, Stylista, as contributing to making the idea of providing, competing, and even paying to undertake unpaid labor as cool. There's a distinct gendered component here in these titles, and it's clear that young women face a much higher level of messaging around unpaid labor than their male counterparts. overall, we're seeing a trend towards the normalization of the expectation that youth are to provide unpaid labor to private corporations and public sector organizations as part of the process of adolescence and during the school to labor market transition. So, statutory architecture. We have minimum wage laws, don't we? Well, funny question. Yes, we do, but there's little evidence that the Ministry of Labor does much proactive enforcement within the youth labor market. And that's to no evidence that that they do any enforcement in relation to unpaid internships. Ontario has a fairly strict set of guidelines governing the use of unpaid labor, but has carved out three main exclusions within the Employment Standards Act where an unpaid internship would be considered legal. Students doing an unpaid internship as part of an academic program are completely excluded from the ESA, and persons completing professional training in enumerated professions such as law, architecture, or psychology are excluded from critical protections related to minimum wage, overtime pay, and hours of work. The most important exclusion allows employers to place persons completely outside the protections of the ESA if they meet all the conditions of a six-part test. The constituent parts of this test are the internship must be similar to a vocational school, the internship must benefit the intern, the employer can derive little, if any, benefit from the intern, the intern cannot replace a paid employee, the intern cannot be accorded a right to employment, and the intern cannot be paid. The overwhelming majority of non-academic unpaid internships in Ontario do not adhere to the six-part test and are illegal. So it's necessary to locate this discussion within the rise of neoliberalism. Neoliberalism is a radical form of public policy premised on free market fundamentalism, which seeks to enforce via regulation the free flow of capital, privatization, reduce the amount of socially protective welfare programs, protect private property, enforce labor market flexibility, and weaken legal protections for workers. So what we're seeing is the government and post-secondary institutions presenting to youth as a false perspective or a bill of goods. Central to this understanding is the impact of human capital theory. And it's a big lie. If you go into education, there will be a job for you. Implicit in this idea is a narrative that education is a personal investment rather than a social good. In Ontario, successive series of governments have adhered to human capital theory and have pushed increasing numbers of youth into post-secondary education without nary a thought of where they might find jobs. Part of this process is shifting the cost of education onto youth through reducing transfers to post-secondary institutions, thereby putting costs directly onto the students and their families and increasing tuition to very high levels. Also allowing universities and colleges to self-regulate in certain high-status programs and forcing the students to assume high levels of debt to pay for education and the necessities of life while they're in school. Unpaid work integrated learning is sound public policy that is touted at the transnational, national, and subnational level. It's touted as sound public policy. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, one of the leading organizations pushing the neoliberal agenda, has released a series of research papers in recent years heralding the benefits of work integrated learning. What we're seeing is a renewed push towards work integrated learning coming through the Ministry of Training, Colleges, and Universities. In the fall of 2012, the Ministry released a white paper that contained a range of measures aimed at increasing the amount of work integrated learning programs across the system. So the deployment of unpaid internships by post-secondary institutions is often part of a government-mandated structural adjustment program that seeks to track outcomes, measure quality, and quantify what students are learning. Work-integrated learning is all the rage within the rarefied circuit of public policymakers and administrators. And it's not just related to unpaid internships, but it can refer to practicums, fieldwork, clinical programs, and job shadowing. Internships are really just a name. So work-integrated learning has trumped formal training for entry-level employees as the main public policy push. It appears that apprenticeships, co-op learning, and bona fide on-the-job training are increasingly viewed as antiques. Apprenticeships in co-op programs are typically well-regulated, pay a living wage, and are well-managed, as opposed to the low regulation, no pay, and poorly managed internships. This highlights a problematic gendered nature of our approach to transitioning students into the labor market. Males simply have better access to better structured training opportunities at a much higher rate than females. And it should be noted that now females now attend post-secondary institutions at a far higher rate than men. So the relationship between university, government, and corporations. There's a deeply symbiotic relationship between post-secondary institutions, government, and corporations. University and colleges continually need an influx of students to receive revenues from tuition, undertake unpaid labor for research activities, and justify the ongoing mission of the university. Administrators, professors, and employees of post-secondary institutions typically don't assess their role in intern culture or pushing unpaid labor onto students. There's a minimal cost for institutions and minimal requirements for supervision in a lot of these internships. What we're seeing within intern culture and on campuses is the development of a pay-to-play culture where opportunity and experience can be bought for a price from for-profit internship providers. Students are essentially paying to work and paying to be trained. Universities are also notorious for posting illegal unpaid internships on career services websites. And we'll return to that when in the discussion. I have something lined up to show everybody. So, solutions. This is the final part, and it's brief, and I just want to highlight some very high-level stuff that I can that I think will work. As a province, we need to acknowledge the lack of an effective labor market policy is slowing overall economic growth, inhibiting productivity, and inflicting economic damage on youth and fueling income inequality and economic polarization. We're facing regulatory failure. Given the amount of economic scarring occurring in the youth populations, the current do-nothing approach is unacceptable when it comes to unpaid internships. I'm going to outline two approaches which could assist in addressing youth unemployment. The Ministry of Labor needs to begin proactively enforcing the law rather than placing responsibility for complaining onto the intern who has the least amount of power in the relationship. A tailored enforcement strategy is necessary, and it would include inspection blitzes, prosecutions, ongoing monitoring of offenders, an anonymous complaints hotline, an education program for employers and post-secondary institutions and interns, and targeting intern-heavy industries. As part of adopting a proactive enforcement strategy, the Ministry of Labor needs to hire a dedicated team of employment standards officers who understand and can enforce the law. It must not be forgotten that the emergence of illegal unpaid internships are simply one byproduct of Ontario's outdated labour market policy. Ontario needs a sea change to how we link people with jobs. Currently, we have a fixation on supply-side labour market policies, which have largely been an assault on workers, pathologize the unemployed as defective, and focus on creating a highly flexible labour market with some of the worst employee protections in the world. The supply-side fixation needs to end, and a balanced approach adopted. Ontario's failed labour market policies is exacerbating the fault from illegal unpaid internships and does nothing to help youth in the school-to-labour market transition. A careful review of the data shows that youth are faring better in Hamilton, Kitchener, Waterloo, and Sudbury. All these centres have close linkages between employers and post-secondary institutions. Furthermore, there appears to be a great focus on apprenticeships, training, and co-op programs in these locations. Ontario needs to adopt a paid-first mentality that prioritizes programs which can offer youth training, but also the ability to earn a paycheck. We need to see the development of a labor market strategy focused on workforce development, linking people with training that actually leads to jobs. Given that all the students currently in post-secondary institutions won't necessarily obtain knowledge economy jobs, we need to create entry-level and mid-career jobs for graduates who aren't able to fully utilize their advanced education. We need sector-specific strategies that target industries where there's a potential for creating good jobs, opportunities for advancement, and where employers are committed to investing in workers. And that's all I have for today. Thank you. Thank you.